जय गोपी जन बाबा गिरिधर दारी यशोर नंदन भज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन भज जन रंजन यमुना तीरन चारी जय राधव कुंजा विहारी जय राधव जय गोपी जन बाबा गिरिधर धारी जय गोपी जन बाबा गिरिधर धारी यशोर नंदन भज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन भज जन रंजन यमुना तीरन चारी यमुना तीरन चारी जय राधव कुंजा विहारी जय राधव कुंजा विहारी
Jaya Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Varaja Kataraya Shota Shata Shri Srimad is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Varaja Kataraya Shota Shata Shri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananti Goti Vaishnava Brinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Seka Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gokopinath Shamakun Radha Kun Givi Govardhan Ki Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Brinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Brinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Chapter 19, entitled The Lord Instructs Sri the Rupa Goswami, Text 145 to 146. So we'll read this verse together and then we'll chant the next verse responsively. Tara madye manusya jati ati alpatara. Tara madye malecha pulinda bauda savara. Although the living entities known as human beings are very small in quantity, that division may still be further subdivided, for there are many uncultured human beings like malechas, pulindas, baudhas, and shabras. So we'll chant this one responsively. Veda nishta madhye adheka veda mukhe mane. Veda nishita papa kare dharma nahi hane. Veda nishta madhye ardheka veda mukhe mane. Veda nishita papa kare dharma nahi gane. Veda nishta madhye ardheka veda mukhe mane. Veda nishita papa kare dharma nahi gane. Veda nishta madhye ardheka veda mukhe mane. Veda nishita pape kare dharma nahi gane. Veda nishna madhye. Among persons who are followers of the Vedas. Ardheka. Almost half. Veda. Vedic scriptures. Mukhe. In the mouth. Mane. Accept. Veda nishidha. Forbidden in the Vedas. Papa. Sins. Kare, perform. Dharma, religious principles. Nahi, not. Gane, count. Translation. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regular principles. I'll just read it one more time. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regular principles. So let's read it together. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regular principles. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. The word Veda means knowledge. Supreme knowledge consists of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him and acting according to that relationship. Action in accordance with the Vedic principles is called religion. Religion means following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are the injunctions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aryans are civilized human beings who have been following the Vedic principles since time immemorial. No one can trace out the history of the Vedic principles set forth so that man might understand the Supreme Being. Literature, or knowledge that seeks the Supreme Being, can be accepted as a bona fide religious system, but there are many different types of religious systems according to the place, the disciples, and the people's capacity to understand. The highest type of religious system is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, thus, Savai Pungsang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhok Shaje. The highest form of religion is that by which one becomes fully conscious of the existence of God, His form, name, qualities, pastimes, abode, and all-pervasive features. When everything is completely known, that is the perfection of Vedic knowledge. The fulfillment of Vedic knowledge is systematic knowledge of the characteristics of God. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15.15. Vaidaischa sarvair aham eva vedyaha. The aim of Vedic knowledge is to understand God. Those who are actually following Vedic knowledge and searching after God cannot commit sinful activities against the Supreme Lord's order. However, in this age of Kali, although men profess to belong to so many different kinds of religion, most of them commit sinful activities against the orders of the Vedic scriptures. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore says herein, Veda nishiddha papakare dharma nahi gane. In this age, men may profess a religion, but they actually do not follow the principles. Instead, they commit all kinds of sin. Among human beings, those who are followers of the Vedic principles are considered civilized. Among these, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. Such people do not care for the regular principles. So this purport there's so many things you can say, wonderful things you can say about Srila Prabhupada, but in reading his books, I feel like this purport really, I could read this purport again and again and again. If you could just understand what Prabhupada is saying in this purport, you know, I feel like you could be Krishna conscious. I really feel like it's a very nice summary of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, all packed into one purport. And there's really a lot to talk about. And that's because in this pastime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing Srila Rupa Goswami on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And in the beginning of that discussion, he tells him that, you know, it's not something that can even be described so easily or completely. So I'm just going to give you a synopsis. It's very deep knowledge. And so he starts with describing the limitless living entities. What the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is like, who are we? We are the living entity. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu starts with the living entities, 8,400,000 species of life. And then he describes the size of the living entity. And then he says, among these minute particles, I am the living entity. The living entity and the Lord are not the same, and the living entity has two divisions, moving and non-moving. And so that brings us up to this purport. So simultaneously, he is also touching on how the Lord is one and different from the living entity, which is important, and is also, in a sense, touched on in this verse by talking about how the living entity is attached to the material energy, and that the living entity, because of false ego, thinks that he's the body, and also can misunderstand that he's God, in the Mayavadi philosophy. And so Prabhupada breaks it down in the purport to describe why this is so. So I thought that, really, if I could break it down to one small point or one small quality that we're talking about in this purport, it's pride. It's the reason why even the group of people who are so-called civilized, so the previous verse, 145, describes uncultured. And so 146 talks about cultured. So even in the group of people who are cultured, he says, almost half are simply just giving lip service and committing all types of sinful activity, even in the so-called civilized part of the human humanity. And that's because of pride. So pride is the cause of all of our interpersonal problems, and also pride is the solution to all of our interpersonal problems. So giving up pride and serving Krishna cures us of this material disease. And the solution is Dharma. That's our Dharma. And that's also what Prabhupada touches on in the purport. What is our Dharma? It's to be a servant of Krishna. So how does this appear practically in our lives? That pride is the cause of all of our interpersonal problems. So more recently, I've been experiencing that when I have a challenge with another person, the underlying theme may be that my way is the right way to do something, or my way is the only way to do something. And what I'm realizing is that there may not be a right way, there may be a different way, and that's okay. There may be more ways than one to do something, so-called the right way. But when we have this mentality that there's only one way and that's the right way, in an example when there may be many different ways to do the same thing and achieve the same thing, then we clash with people. Now sometimes there is a best way to do something and a right way to do something. And certainly the Vedic scriptures are very detailed in describing the path to self-realization. But even in that regard, everybody may come to it in a slightly different fashion. And that's okay. It's supposed to be like that. That's why, the process had been described as ecumenical. It's flexible in the sense that everybody may have a slightly different way that they come to Krishna consciousness. And that's what makes preaching so sweet, is that we may have some experience that attracts someone to Krishna consciousness that someone else doesn't have. So when you're preaching, it may be, actually, even though we can all preach the same message, sometimes people relate to us differently, and that may make us specifically qualified to speak to a certain group or in a specific setting or even a specific person because they can relate to us. So there's more than one way, most of the time, to do something. And when we have this perception that there's one way and one right way, and that right way is my way, then we clash. And that's because of our pride. when we think there's one way and one right way and we clash, and our mentality is that there's only one way to a philosophy of life, or we just go with the flow of the material energy, then we are confused about really what our identity is and what we're supposed to be doing in this life. And so we can wake up through self-realization. But it may take some difficult interpersonal relationships before we have that realization. We may have to suffer. Why do I have so many problems? Why, even though seemingly I'm a civilized person, a good person, seemingly, I still have, I'm still suffering in the modes of nature, birth, death, disease, and old age. Why is that? So I really, even in a sense, I mean, I can relate to this verse as far as, giving lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities against these principles. I want to think that I'm in the civilized group, and also I'm not somebody that's giving lip service. And that may be true some of the time, most of the time, all of the time, or none of the time. I mean, unless somebody is fully self-realized, we have some aspect of pride that's going to come through, even if we're devotees and we're practicing devotional service. I still feel like I can relate to this verse as far as giving lip service. Now, when we follow the regular principles, we actually, a lot of our karma becomes eliminated. And it's spoken about when you take a diksha, you're kind of start with a fresh slate. Your karma is in largely gone, and you're starting new. Much of that is because we have made a commitment to follow the regular principles, and those regular principles are really the basis of sinful activity in the material world. So if you're practicing devotional service, and and you've made a commitment to follow those regular principles, largely you have become free from sinful activities. And if you're trying to follow the regular principles, really that is the most important thing that one can do to start to practice Krishna consciousness. But once we're practicing following the regular principles, we're initiated, we're chanting, do I still give lip service sometimes? Do I still have anarthas, Those anarthas are still there. So we may have this still some duality in our minds that we are a certain way, but the reality is that we still have these anarthas that guide us in our lives that we're trying to get rid of, and the process of devotional service is purifying us of, but still they crop up in our lives. This pride still crops up. Even though we are trying very hard, why is that? So I had a sort of a discussion with my neighbor recently. I can say in Gainesville, our properties are much different than Alachua. So you may not notice in Alachua, if you have a few branches in your large property, very much at the fringes. But in Gainesville, if you have a very small property with like a fence, like I do, and you have a manicured yard, you may notice if there are some branches in the yard. So my brother-in-law, who does my yard, he had just cut the grass, and I saw that there were some branches on the cut grass. So I knew that my brother-in-law would not leave these branches there. So I understood it that my neighbor had taken these branches that fell in his yard, and he threw them over the fence into my yard. So I understood that he was mad, and that he wasn't going to talk. He was so mad that he wasn't going to talk to me about these branches. So I felt like I need to talk to him about this to see why he's mad at me, because I see that this is my property here, right, with the fence. So I asked him, hey, but can we talk? I want to ask you about something. So the first thing I said was, did you throw these branches in my yard? Because, I mean, I wasn't 100% sure. They could have, my brother-in-law could have, actually, I asked him first to see if he left them there, and he said no. So I asked him, did you throw these branches? He said, yes. So I said, well, okay. That's really all I wanted to know, what's going on. And so then he explained everything. I could tell he had a lot to say. And so I listened to him. I don't know how long, but it seemed like maybe 8 or 10 minutes. And then, you know, I summarized what he said. Okay, you know, you feel like, you know, the branches were intentionally put in your yard and you're kind of unhappy that, you know, the person who services my yard is kind of didn't notice that and may have done some other things in the past that, you know, you think were intentionally done, and that you're sorry that you threw them there, that you know, feel like you should have spoken to me first. I appreciate that. I could relate. I said I could relate to you. If, you know, if I felt that somebody was throwing things in my yard, I would also be very upset. Then I said, did I understand you? Do you feel like I have an understanding of how you feel? Yes, 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 thank you. I understand. I said, okay. Let me explain, you know, my perception, because I think maybe it's different. So I started to explain, like, you know, I'll try to keep it brief, but it was a long discussion. But I said, let's just consider that actually my brother-in-law edged your yard one day and didn't charge you. You said you would pay, but you didn't. But he just did it. He doesn't care. He doesn't want any money. But all the things that you're saying that you feel like he's intentionally doing things, maybe also consider that as something that's true. And maybe he's really a good person, is the essence of what I was trying to say. No, no, you're misconstruing what I say. You're not understanding. I feel like this is an argument, he said. He said, I said I feel like he's intentionally throwing these things in my yard. So then I understood that, you know, the discussion was over, and that it was a person who really felt like, you know, there was only one way, there was only one opinion, there was only one option. You know, so I just decided, rather than try to discuss and reason, I just pacified him, you know, and just let him feel like I accepted his apology, which was the whole point of my discussion anyway, was, you know, just come to me, just ask me, I'll pick up the branches, you know. I said, I'll pick them up. If, you know, I hire my brother-in-law, but if there's something you don't like, just ask me and I'll pick them up, you know. But I don't want you to feel like, you know, there's anything intentionally being done to you. But I'm also guilty of this same mentality. When I have an opinion, I will say, I feel, and that's not a feeling, you know? That's my opinion. But my opinion is so important to me because of my pride that I'm unable to see that there's another side to the story. Matter of fact, there's usually three sides to every story. My side, your side, and then what actually happened, right? Because we're all living entities, we all have our own perception. And it's slightly different. Even in physics, physics says that the laws of physics are different depending on gravity and where you're located in the material world. So even when you measure things in physics, depending on where you're located, you'll get different measurements. Isn't that interesting? So there is more than one perception about things. So, and there may be three, or there may be actually unlimited, because the Lord also has His perfect perception of things. So when I have this mentality that, you know, my opinion, my way of doing things is the ultimate, supreme, and only way, I'm trying to be God. And that's pride, and that is the cause of all of my interpersonal relationship difficulties and all of my interpersonal relationships, including why I cannot become closer to Krishna. Because he's also a person. And he also will pacify us because he loves us and he wants us to come back to him. When we fight with him, he doesn't fight back with us. Right? That's one of the things the atheists say. Show me God. Why won't God show me himself? Because you don't care and you don't want to know. Your pride is so big that if he tried to fight with you and show that he's a loving person, so he would never do that. But you don't understand that. So God just takes the position of, okay, whenever you're ready. As a matter of fact, God takes the position of more than that. He actually will help you by other means that you can't even see or realize, but he's helping you. Unknowingly doing devotional service, I mean, you gain benefit from that. He also sends his bhaktas to directly have some sort of connection with you one way or another, even if it's indirect, taking prasadam, helping a devotee who you don't know is a devotee, hearing the holy name and Harinam in the street, you know, touching one of Prabhupada's books. I mean, there's so many ways that the Lord tries to indirectly, so to speak, bring you back to him. But he also pacifies living entities who are angry and really take the position of challenging or atheistic or inimical to him. So, can you relate in any way to having some relationship with a coworker, a neighbor, a friend, a family member, where you had some interpersonal disagreement and that the real crux of it was pride, either your pride or the other person's pride or a mixture of the two? And how did you deal with that situation? And does the fact that you're a devotee and practicing Krishna consciousness and know the absolute philosophy, does it help you in your everyday life and relationships with other people? The other night I was reading Krishna book, and I felt like inevitably, if I'm preparing a class for the month, whatever I'm reading, it may seemingly be like, it's usually, I mean, I have some systematic reading, but I also have some random reading where I just like open a book and just read, like, you know, pick a chapter and start reading. And I feel like, kind of like this purport where you just read it and you're like, wow, the entire philosophy is packed into two paragraphs. How deep is that? I read the pastime in Krishna book of Sishupal. So there was in that chapter, or one of the pastimes of Sishupal, but it was a Rajasuya pastime, where the Pandavas, Krishna and Draupadi, they had convinced Yudhisthira Maharaj to do this this yajna, the Rajasuya yajna, which is a yajna. I mean, the essence of it is the King of Kings. Of all of the great people, of all the great kings and leaders, this king is the king of those kings. And that King of Kings can be King of Kings through war or through peace and discussion and deliberation. So at this yajna, there were all of the great people, all the demigods, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, all the families, all the kings, essentially described as, you know, everyone was there for this yajna, because it is the yajna of the King of Kings. And the Brahmins, Prabhupada talks about how, you know, to do the yajna properly, even if one syllable of one word of one mantra is slightly pronounced incorrectly, the yajna is not complete. So there were so many, you know, Brahmins and trying to make the process really perfect. So the Agra Puja is the first part of the Rajasuya yajna. Agra means first, so it's worshipping the greatest personality that's at the yajna. So how can you pick that personality when there are so many great personalities there? So there is some discussion, some deliberation. I mean, Shiva, Brahma, and Indra are there, right? So, and Krishna. So Sahadev goes into a glorification of Krishna, all of Krishna's, you know, wonderful qualities. And Sishupal is there, an enemy of Krishna, who has this resentment against Krishna so deep because Krishna married Rukmini, that really it's like it's in the core of his heart. He cannot let go of this resentment. He becomes so angry when he hears all of these glorifications of Krishna. And everybody stands up and seemingly unanimously agrees that Krishna is the greatest personality there and he will get Agra Puja. And Sishupala is sitting. He won't stand. He won't stand until his anger boils over so much that he stands up in this great assembly of the greatest personalities in the world, really in the entire creation. And he starts to attempt to denounce Krishna and to offend and to try to show in his mind how Krishna is not the greatest personality. A matter of fact, how he's, you know, a rascal. He says that, you know, this person, and so some of the sort of the worst things that he could say about Krishna are some of the focus of what's in the Krishna book, of which are that he points out that Krishna has no caste. He's independent. He doesn't follow the Vedas. And because of that, he has no good qualities. He tries to pick the things that would be the lowest of low that you could say about someone. And then Prabhupada explains that actually you can't say anything bad about Krishna. He actually glorifies Krishna in what he says, because those things that he says that he thinks are the lowest of the low are actually glorifications of Krishna. Because Krishna is God, he doesn't have a caste. He's beyond the Vedic literature. And you know what? He doesn't have any good qualities because he's the absolute truth. He only has purely good qualities. He doesn't have any material qualities. These are the so-called good qualities that people think in the material world are good. But they're actually not purely good. So after he gives his speech there, Krishna listens, you know, empathetic listening. What a great example is this pastime. He just lets Shishupal vent there without trying to, attack him verbally or try to prove him wrong. He doesn't have to. I mean, Shishupal is making a complete fool of himself. And I can relate. You know, sometimes you have to, you ever hear that saying, you should just quit while you're ahead. So Shishupala starts to make some disturbance in the assembly. Devotees are, while he's saying the speech, they're walking out. You know, the devotees that may not be able to, you know, physically defend, you know, this great personality, Krishna, they walk out with their ears, with hands over their ears. Some kings start to, they take up their swords and shields, and they're going to fight with Shishupala. And Shishupala starts abusing some of these kings. And at that point, Krishna said, you know, well, he didn't say, but it was enough for Krishna. And so he pacified Sishupal with the Sudarshan Chakra, severing his head. So if you just read this pastime, you're like, wow, you know, I can just imagine, you know, if you just really didn't have any knowledge of like who Krishna is and you read this and you're like, wow, if you just challenge God, he's going to kill you. But really, he liberated Shishupal, who was Krishna conscious. he was so focused and absorbed in Krishna. And that, you know, as it's described in Bhagavad Gita, in 8.6, you know, his mind was focused on Krishna when he died. He was absorbed into Krishna's body, and ultimately he was reinstated into his position of service in the spiritual world. Because he's a devotee, right? We're all devotees. So this is an extreme example of pride, of how someone's pride is the cause of all of their interpersonal problems. You know? So we know that Shishupala is a devotee, and he's in the spiritual world. He has this, you know, pastime with Krishna as a demon. But if I look at that as, you know, that's kind of me, because I have pride. Even in this, you know, assembly of the greatest personalities, you know, he couldn't see Krishna's, you know, how great Krishna is because of pride, that anartha there. Krishna also describes this specifically himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Manasu yanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. And in that purport, Prabhupada describes how the Mayavadis say that devotional service is not easy. But that's because they're not devotees. For the devotee, devotional service is easy. It's natural. It's like for water. Is it hard for water to be wet? No, I mean, that is the quality of water. Is it difficult for heat, for fire to give heat and light? No, I mean, that's the essence of fire, right? So the essence of the living entity is that they are part and parcel of Krishna. They are servants of Krishna. So this mentality of it's not easy is pride. And that's why Mayavadi philosophy so subtly, for some, is like spiritual. You know, because if you just take the Brahman realization away from absolute truth and just look at it by itself, it's atheism. It's kind of a covered atheism. Is it true? Yes. But is it true by itself? No. And that's achintabheda-bheda-tattva, simultaneously, inconceivably one and different. If you just take it away, it's not true. It's not the absolute truth. But is it true? Yes. It's true because that's Krishna's energy, and Krishna's a person. So that's why for Mayavadis, if that is the only thing that's true for you and everything else is false, it's an atheistic philosophy. And it can be very persuading for some who are struggling in the material world and suffering and want to feel like, you know, they want relief from this suffering. Because when you're God, you can get a temporary feeling of superiority from that. But it doesn't last long when, you know, I forget how Prabhupada has said so many things in this regard that really touch the essence of it. But I think one of it he says, when you have a toothache, right? And you're in pain. Does God have a toothache? Is God in pain? No. So how are you one with God? How is that true? So the purport for this verse, Prabhupada explains that it's not easy for non-devotees, for Mayavadis, to practice Krishna consciousness, but it's our dharma. So how can we, how do we deal with this pride? Well, the process is there. We just have to try to follow it. And so, first we have to know the process. We have to inquire. And we sort of discussed a little bit this about this at during the last class I gave is Gyan. Is we have to inquire, we have to ask, we have to seek the absolute truth. That's the beginning. Because if we're inimical or challenging or we have no faith, then we disqualify ourselves. Once we inquire and we have a source of perfect knowledge, like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada's books, the Parampara, practitioners of devotion of Bhakti Yoga, then we have a source of knowledge, then we have to take that association. And it's described in Nectar of Devotion how what that exactly means. Accepting prasadam, offering prasadam, accepting gifts, offering gifts, revealing our mind in confidence, hearing confidentially. These are the ways that we have loving exchanges with devotees. So sometimes you hear Prabhupada say, give him prasadam, you know? That's where that person is at, that will help them. We shouldn't forget that, and we shouldn't minimize the power of prasadam. And I can talk about that for hours, because that's how I came to Krishna consciousness, through Krishna lunch. But also, you know, if we are taking prasadam every day, what else can we do? Well, we can reveal our minds to others in confidence, people we trust, people we consider siksha gurus. And hearing confidentially, sometimes people will rely on us to share their difficulties or inquire about, you know, how to cope with something spiritually. And then sadhana bhakti. If you inquire confidentially from the spiritual master or from a siksha guru, one of the suggestions is to have a spiritual practice. So, you know, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, we need a practice, and then Anatana Vritti. So, we should try to follow these four regular principles. Well, what if we can't? Associating with the devotees will inspire you and give you the faith and enthusiasm that will make these four sinful activities no longer even be something that, you know, is in your consciousness ever. You know, that's my experience. I think it's that people don't want to give them up, that they have the problem, not people that do want to give them up and can't. If you stay around long enough and you really have an honest desire to practice Krishna consciousness, you know, it will happen. Don't give up. And then chanting a prescribed number of rounds every day. You know, that I remember sitting down and chanting one round every day. The perception may be that, you know, devotees are so amazing, and they are, that they're just like born chanting 16 rounds or 32 rounds. Or, I mean, that's how I see devotees. But, I mean, I think the reality for most of us, or for me, I can speak, is that, you know, just start with one round. The important thing is the commitment. You know, make that commitment to just start chanting a specific amount. It's like when you make a commitment to someone you love, or at work, you have a meeting. The meeting is, I mean, when you ask to meet with your boss, you're just not like, hey, I want to meet with you. You know, it's like, can I meet with you for like 10 minutes? Can I get on your schedule for 10 minutes? Because that person's important. So it's kind of part of that. When you have a commitment, it actually shows that it's an important relationship, that you love someone, basically, enough that you're going to give them that time. So chanting one round is kind of like that. It may take any, you know, 7-10 minutes. And the easiest time to do it's in the morning, because we don't have so many emails or phone calls or social media to look at that time. So when we practice Krishna consciousness, we gain realization. We start to see our pride, and we see how our pride is the cause of all of our problems, and we also start to see that, you know, pride's also the solution. If we can just become free from that attachment we have. And we'll see that, you know, our life will change. Without pride, you know, I gave the example earlier how, you know, think of a relationship, be it your neighbor, your coworker, your family member, and do you see that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness has helped you in these relationships? And I can say for me that it has, you know. I think I would have dealt with that situation I had differently if I haven't had the shelter of the devotees and had some understanding that, you know, this is not that person. This is just this, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. You know, have some mercy for others, because, you know, we're not perfect either, and we're all trying to, hopefully, in the civilized group, which is the group we're talking about, we're all trying to make spiritual advancement, even if we're not perfect at it. So I'll end there. Any questions or comments?
I was just thinking about what you said about the verse and how you could just read it over and over again, that everything was there. It reminded me of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who said something like a newspaper, there's so much in it, it's published every day, but at the end of the day it's used for the dog, you know, to do his business, and how useless it is. I don't remember the exact his exact words, but, you know, pretty much something like that. And then also in terms of pride, I really appreciate it, your focus on that, because I started thinking how, like you said, most of the problems come about through pride, like feeling offended or feeling slighted. You know, it's like when Maharaj Prickett went to visit the ashram of the yogi and he didn't respond or show any respect. Maharaj Prickett, because of his pride, also to, you know, illustrate a pastime, but got him with the snake, and then the son became angry, and, you know, also in the assembly with Daksha, how, you know, he became offended because Lord Shiva didn't stand up when he came in. Everybody else did. But if we actually practice, you know, Trinadapi Sunichena, that we're humbler than a blade of grass, then things like that wouldn't matter. If we just focus on our constitutional position as servants of Krishna, we would be saved so much strife. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jai. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaura Premanandi.